The decision was his, that he wanted to stay. He didn't want to go back to Indonesia.
Tell us a little bit about the work President Obama's mother did in Indonesia and why it was so important to her.
Well, she went back to the University of Hawaii and became an anthropologist. She became a graduate student in anthropology. And she decided to do her field work on the subject of rural industries, handicraft industries in villages in Java. This was a particularly interesting subject because Indonesia and Java has an extraordinary tradition of handicrafts, batik and metalwork and, pottery and all sorts of things that are used in daily life, even now, whereas in other developing countries, the old handicraft industries had been sort of swallowed up into tourist-based industries that were simply churning out junk for the tourist market. In Indonesia, these things went on well into the time that Anne was there, and she was fascinated. She'd always been fascinated by sort of beautiful objects, and she got her interest in beautiful textiles and objects went to an interest then turned into an interest in the lives of the people who produced those. So she focused her research on these village industries and ended up centering her what became a 1,000-page dissertation on a particular village called Kajar, which was a blacksmithing village. That is, not that was shoeing horses, but that was making metal tools for agriculture and also gamelan gongs for gamelan orchestras. And so she spent an enormous amount of time in the late 70s in these villages, and particularly in the village of Kajar, talking to the blacksmiths. And blacksmithing was a male occupation. Traditionally, women had not been allowed to work in the forges. Only when it became more and more in that particular village, more and more important economically as agriculture ceased to be important for that particular place, were women allowed into the forges. But Anne, for the most part, was the only woman hanging out in these places when she was doing this work. So that was what she ended up writing her dissertation about, which took many, many years. And in the meantime, she applied her skills to working in international development. And that interest in village industry turned into an interest in how to make it possible for women to work their way out of poverty in handicraft industries. And eventually the question of how to get more credit to women who wanted to start these kinds of businesses. So she ended up being both an anthropologist, then a development consultant, and then a person working in the field of microfinance.
So you found a list of her long-range goals. What year was this from?
That was written on January 1st, 1985. And it's an extraordinary list that I was stunned to see, because this was at a moment, a sort of lull in her career. She's come back to Hawaii because she wants to allow her daughter Maya to go to high school at Punahou also. And she sits down and she's kind of trying to sort out various things that she would like to get done, presumably in the next 5 or 10 years. Finish her dissertation. One of the things is make a salary of about, it just says 60K, but make a salary of $60,000, I'm assuming. Lose some weight. Raise Maya well. Remarry. That was a surprise to me. And one of them is constructive dialogue with Barry.
Yeah, I read that and I thought, constructive dialogue, what does that mean? Were they having problems then?
I haven't gotten anyone to tell me that they knew of any such problems. And Anne was the kind of person who would perhaps think about her parental obligations in that way, you know, constantly thinking, how can I do this better? Nevertheless, there are indications from some of her friends that she did feel some sadness about the distance between them at different times. There's obviously a geographical distance, and then whatever distance that brought along emotionally. So at different moments in her life, she is upset and wanting, at one point she goes back in his senior year in Hawaii just to be with him because she realizes it's his last year of his childhood. Later, she's, one friend describes her as wistful about his decision to kind of move to Chicago and root himself in Chicago and emphasize the sort of black part of himself. So I think there was a theme, and this is just snippets of little things that I've stumbled upon, that suggest she had a kind of longing for a closer relationship with him.
My guest is Jenny Scott, author of the new book, A Singular Woman, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mother. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jenny Scott. She's a former New York Times reporter who, during the 2008 presidential campaign, wrote about then-candidate Barack Obama. One of her articles was about his mother. She's expanded all that research into a new book called A Singular Woman, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mother. You interviewed President Obama for this book, and you spoke with him in the Oval Office for, what, a couple of hours?
No, just half an hour.
Half an hour. Okay, well, you got what you could in that.
That was pretty good.
So did you share with him research that you had? Was he curious what you learned about his mother that maybe he didn't know?
We had a limited amount of time. He's a busy man. And I had been told that I would have, 20 minutes or so. And so I'd boiled down my questions to the most crucial seven or so questions that I had. And I ended up getting 50% more time than I thought. But I didn't have time to take him back over everything that I'd learned. And no, he didn't ask me because I think he probably had other things going too.
So what did you learn from him that you thought was most interesting?
Well, several things. I asked him about the impression left by his book that his mother was sort of a naive idealist, something that comes through in the way he talks and sometimes even the way other family members talk about her, but is not at all the description that I get from people who knew her as a colleague and close friends of hers. No one has ever described her that way to me. And he said that he did think of her as a bit that way, but he didn't think of it as a pejorative. He described those qualities as a source of her strength in many ways. And he told me an extraordinary story about something that occurred during the campaign on the night of the Iowa caucuses, and how he was reminded of her at a moment when he was confronted with the extraordinary diversity, sort of improbable, surprising diversity at this caucus site in Des Moines, and how that night, leaving, having just occurred to him that they're actually going to win that night, he thought about his mother and he kind of teared up. And he said it was something about the mix of people there and the sense that we could reach across our apparent differences and make contact, and that there was more similarity than difference between us and more good than evil in all of us. And he said, I guess that really is the naive idealism I'm talking about in her. And I think it's the naive idealism in me.
President Obama also told you that despite all of her strengths, she wasn't a well-organized person and that disorganization spilled over. Did that present problems for him?
I think he described it as sort of part of the slightly chaotic quality of his childhood. And I said to him, well, disorganization, that could be anything from a messy room to a messy life. And he said, all of the above. So my sense is that it did spill over. He didn't go into details about this, but, he tells the story in the book of there not being that much food in the refrigerator when he brought friends home from school. And he refers to the constant motion of his childhood. So I think it is something, particularly perhaps in retrospect, that he feels.
What are your final impressions of Ann Dunham, President Obama's mother?
Well, I find her absolutely fascinating. She was a thoroughly unconventional person who dared to do things that many of us don't even try to do now. She, at a time when, there were laws against interracial marriage in nearly two dozen states, she conceived a child with an African and married him. She runs off to Indonesia at a time when there's extraordinary political and social upheaval. She is a graduate student raising two biracial children by herself at a time when women in graduate school rarely did anything like that. She goes back and does this fascinating kind of ground-level research in villages in Java where Western women are rarely seen, working in a specialty that is entirely male. She then becomes a pioneer in the field of microfinance 20 years before Muhammad Yunus and Grameen Bank in in Bangladesh won the Nobel Prize for it. She's just a forerunner in so many ways, and yet she's also thoroughly human. She is not a particularly a visionary. She's a person who kind of improvised her life, making the best sometimes out of not particularly wise decisions, and other times really making very smart decisions under difficult circumstances. So I think there's a lot that we can learn from her, not just about what it means to be a good mother, or at least question our assumptions about that. But also, we can get a lot of insight into the president, who I think is a person who many Americans still feel they don't fully understand.
Don't you wish that she had lived to find out her son became president?
It does seem like a rotten fate. She died just as he was launching his first campaign for public office, so she never got any glimpse of what was to come.
Well, Jenny Scott, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. It was wonderful to be here.
Jenny Scott is the author of the new book, A Singular Woman, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mother. You can read an excerpt on our website, freshair.npr.org, where you can also download podcasts of our show. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne Baldonado, Joan Tuohy-Westman, Sam Brigger, John Myers, John Sheehan, Lauren Krenzel, and Heidi Simon. I'm Terry Gross.